Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
We did an episode about one of our characters thinking about getting an adult circumcision. The episode was fine, but it wasn't as funny as the standards notes I got. As discussed at the table, in this episode, we are dealing with a tonnage issue with regard to sexual suggestive materials. It is essential to reduce and or modify for the significant number of uses of penis. And then they list, such as your thingy, page 2. Covered wagon and unit, page 3.
Covered wagon.
Hooded cobra, page 21.
Welcome, MythFits.
Welcome back to another episode of MythFits. I am your host, Tori Belaichi.
And I'm Carrie Byron.
You guys, thank you so much for coming back. We are feeling the love.
Oh my God, are we feeling the love? I mean, we just launched and we're already like, we're going up the charts quickly.
We're climbing, we're charting. In the podcast industry, these are things that we're finding out. We're charting.
That's a charting thing.
We're charting.
That sounds like
we're
something dirty, doesn't it?
What's that?
Sounds like something dirty. I don't know.
It's like sharding.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
But different.
But better. But like way better.
Well, the big launch was huge. That was you went to New York. How was that?
Okay. So I mean, last weekend, it was really just kind of, you know, last minute because I heard we were going to have a billboard in Times Square. And I had this moment where I realized, like, you and I are never on the billboards. Like, it was always Jamie and Adam. This is like our first billboard advertisement, something where it's like you and me. And
right. So
I was like, I'm going to New York. So I just like last minute, I ran off to New York. I got a cute little apartment in Brooklyn. I went out. I went and saw the billboard in Times Square, which I'm not gonna lie.
I was a little jealous. I was like watching your Instagram post, and I was like, ugh. Like I wanted to be there so bad. Like it would have been so much fun to both be in Times Square in front of the billboard, but I couldn't make it. Sorry.
I know. I was FaceTiming you and I could see how happy you were, but I kept putting the phone down as if like you were standing next to me so that I could see the billboard. And I realized you were just like looking at the sky and maybe, I don't know, the naked cowboy that was running past. And I'm like, oh, wait, Tori, look at the billboard. It was really, really fun. And then, of course.
Well, there was one point when you had your phone up and there was a guy standing directly underneath the billboard and he was like looking down at his phone. And I'm like, look, turn around, dude.
Look right there.
Look, yeah. Pay attention.
And then after that, of course, I went and paint the town red. I had like a cocktail in every neighborhood. I was just all over the place. I sat down in front of Madison Square and ate a hot dog. Like I just went as New York as possible.
Man.
I was out. I was having so much fun for just like, you know, that quick little turn and burn trip so I could come back here to you.
I know. I was very, very sad that
so
I couldn't
make it. So why didn't
you
come? You should have come.
Because I couldn't find a babysitter. I know this is all very boring to people who don't have kids. It used to be boring to me where it was like a babysitter. The fact that I'm even talking about finding a babysitter, it was never on my radar. Now it's like, a babysitter is probably one of the most important peoples in our lives because it's like it gives us a chance to have a life. So yeah, we couldn't get a babysitter. And so I was stuck at home watching the little one and being jealous watching you tear up New York.
Okay, we have role reversed because during Mythbusters, which I think was a better time to like be single, wild and free because we had just like enough fame for like free drinks and like having a little bit more fun going out, like awesome. But like now it's you. You're stuck at home.
It's a completely reversal of roles.
Maybe you need to train that little dog to be like a nanny dog. Was it Peter Pan had the nanny was a dog?
Yeah. My dog is terrified. Like he fears for his life when he's around my kid. But you know what I was thinking? I've been watching all these videos about these new humanoid robots that are coming out.
Yeah.
And they're doing all these tasks. And I was like, what if I were to like project my face onto the face of the robot, maybe dress it up to look kind of like me, maybe give him like a wig so that it kind of looks like me. And then I have a recording on there to be able to babysit for my kid. And like, I could check in on her, make sure she's not lighting the house on fire, make sure she's not killing the dog. What do you think?
Killing the dog?
Yeah. My kid is, she's nuts.
Okay. Wait. You don't want like a nanny bot, like Rosie from the Jetsons. You want a Tory bot, like a representation. Isn't that a little too uncanny valley? A little too creepy, because it's not you.
I mean, I feel like she's at the age right now where she probably would be a little concerned. But, you know, once I started talking and she saw my face, I think she'd be like, oh, that's daddy. Cool.
I mean, that has to be a really realistic, really realistic robot. I mean, it would have to have a little more nuance than just, I am Tori.
No, it would be my face. Like, it would be a recording on the robot's face. So, you know, it would be basically looking at a screen and I could be there and I could talk to her and we communicate. So it'd be like FaceTiming, but instead of holding it in your hand, you have it on the robot's face. I think this is a huge moneymaker.
Terrifying. I don't think the technology is quite there yet because of all the videos I've seen, they're still like a little creepy. Like you can see like dead-eyed. I feel like you're going to creep out your kid.
Or like, I could just take my iPad and tape it to the robot's head.
Like How's Modern that? Family?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like totally, Phil from Modern Family when it was like.
Totally.
Well, ironically, our guest today is the producer of Modern Family. So we can ask him about that later.
Yeah. You know, it's since we've launched talking about old episodes of Mythbusters, it's like gotten me thinking about the old days when we started. And I'm just curious, like when you started Mythbusters, did you want to be in front of the camera?
Oh, you know this. I was not ready for this. This was trial by fire. I was super duper duper shy and I didn't know how to talk to a camera. I just wanted to like do special effects, be behind the scenes, build cool stuff. I basically like wanted to be you when I grew up. I wanted to like work at ILM and
That's
work
weird.
On Star Wars. Like I wanted to do what you did. Like I did not think I was going to be on camera. You didn't either.
I did not want to be on camera. You were good though. I remember like from the get-go, when they hired us onto Mythbusters, they told us, don't worry, you're not going to have to talk to the camera. You're going to be background builders. And occasionally, they might ask you, what are you doing? You know, I'm screwing this thing into the wall. You know, like explaining exactly what we were doing. But don't worry, you don't have to host. Jamie and Adam are going to be the hosts. It was like, great, right. That I can handle. I know how to build stuff. I don't like I don't know how to be a person on television. And then it was like a few weeks into it and they're like, this isn't working. We're actually going slower. It's taking us longer. So what we're going to do is we're going to have Jamie and Adam be one team and then you guys become another team. And you guys, isn't this great? You guys are going to be on television. You're going to be our new hosts.
You're like,
and,
no.
Oh, dude, it was like the worst. Like, it's seriously, nothing could have been worse because it was just like, I did not sign up for this. I don't want to be on camera. Oh,
in my brain, I was like, it felt like a home movie. And I'd always had a camera and pulled that around for like home movies. And I just was like, this is on some weird cable channel like that plays animal documentaries. Nobody's going to see this. So there was like not a lot of pressure at first because I just figured nobody'd see it. Like, whatever it was. I think I got more nervous as the show got more popular. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, my God, I look weird. And why am I doing that with my face? And where did I just don't know where to put my hands. Like, what is this?
That was the other thing. You're like faced. You have to like face the reality of who you are. And it was like, oh, that's what I sound like. Oh, that's what I look like when I'm just standing there. Like my posture's so bad. God, I remember watching first few episodes and they were doing this thing where like if we would get in an argument with, or not an argument, but I remember there was one time where I got into an argument with Adam. He was like yelling at me for not going fast enough. And I yelled back. And then when they cut the episode together, they didn't show the part where he yelled at me. So it looked like I was just a jerk. Like I was just
sabotage.
Being a complete. Yeah.
I remember this. You were so pissed when the episode came out. You're like, I look like a dick.
Yes. I'm like, I'm going to quit. I can't do this. Like, and then I remember calling my dad. I go, Dad, they're making me look like a jerk. And my dad's all, well, Tori, you are a jerk. And I was like, Dad, what are you talking about? Like, that doesn't help. And he was like, look, you're sarcastic. You make, you know, you're cracking jokes. You're always being, you're a little bit of a jerk. And I was like, way to put me in my place, Dad.
Yeah, way to ground you. I mean, making TV was, it's so weird. And making TV back then, it was kind of like, it was very different what we were doing. Like making reality television, I have a feeling is very different than making scripted television. You know, it's dirty. It's in the moment. I bet there's a lot more editing involved because, like, we don't know what we're saying. And sometimes we're really bad at it. So I'm imagining that when you make scripted television, maybe it's a little bit easier. Like, maybe it's a little more predictable.
Yeah, completely. Because, I mean, it's all scripted. It's all scheduled out, right? You're trying to make your days. For Mythbusters, I remember in the very beginning, they would film us constantly. Do you remember? They would just be rolling all day, even if we weren't doing anything interesting. And then we got notes from editorial and they're like, can you guys stop filming everything? Because we have to go through and screen. We have to view every single tape to find what is usable.
For every hour that you're working is an hour that they're watching. That must have been excruciating.
Yes.
Are you still pitching shows? Because like I still every now and then I want like another Mythbuster show. And I know that you and I have pitched a lot of shows together. Like, are you pitching shows yourself right now?
Not now, but like back in the 90s, I was working for Lucasfilm and me and a buddy were like super nerds. And so we were like, let's come up with a TV show that we can pitch to the science fiction show. So Sci-Fi Channel was an independent network at the time. They hadn't been bought by Universal yet. And so they would mostly show old science fiction movies. And we were just like, let's see if we can come up with a late night show for them. And so the concept was it was an alien late night talk show. And so we would beam guests onto the show and then do the interview and then beam them back. And so we had this whole concept. So we go into the Science Channel, we pitch the idea and they're like, okay, we need to see this character come to life. So we did this like sizzle reel. So we went, made this actor up, Steve Cahila, hilarious guy. You should check him out. He's like been in a million movies and TV shows. He came up, we put him in makeup, and we just did this like really quick improv with him to show Sci-Fi what the concept would look like. And I want to show you that clip.
You have a clip?
It's Tony Arga, the best love talk show host in the universe. Now from his motion manager, Tony Arga!
Oh, so you've got an alien host.
Yeah. So he was supposed to be like this crooner, you know, like Dean Martin, but he's an alien.
Oh my gosh, this is hilarious.
Welcome to Tommy Argon Show.
So it's fully like the Tonight Show, but like it's aliens.
Yes.
Why didn't he buy this? This is funny.
So listen to what happened. This is what sucks. And it's like, it bums me out so hard. So like the amount of work it took, we had to like do his makeup. We shot everything on green screen, shot miniatures, did all these comps. I mean, it was like a ton of work to get that little clip
It's so great. We go back. I want to watch that show.
You would have, I mean, like now that would have been such a perfect, like, you imagine all the guests that you could get on there and just play along with this alien character, right? So we go back to Sci-Fi Channel. We show them this reel. They're like, oh my God, this is great. This is great. And we're like, yeah, you know, for our first episode, we want to get William Shatner. And the producer's like, okay, how much is it going to cost? And when we heard that, this is what all the, you know, showrunners would tell us, the people who produce, they're like, if the network asks you how much it's going to cost, it's a good sign that they're thinking about buying the show. So they're asking us all this. And we're like, oh, we could do it for cheap, this and that. And we're all getting excited. And we're all, William Shatner will be our first guest. And they all looked and they're all, yeah, William Shatner, he'll do anything these days. And they kind of looked at each other. And I swear to God, you felt the air leave the room. And they kind of were like, huh. So we leave. We get a call from them. They're like, we're passing on the show. But then a few months later, they put a late night talk show with William Shatner hosting. They took our idea.
Okay, that happened to us so many times. We'd pitch a show and then we'd see it on the network later. Remember, we wanted to do a Mythbusters style prank show and we pitched it to Discovery and they're like, no, we won't want to do that. And then they did one like right afterwards using like the same tagline, but it was with Johnny Galecki.
Yes. They were like, we're not in the prank world. We don't do prank shows. And we're like, it's such a cool, you know, this would be such a cool show. And they're like, yeah, we're not in the prank world. And then, months later, they come out with a prank show.
I found out it was because you and I had pitched it to Sci-Fi and Sci-Fi was interested. And all of a sudden Discovery heard that they were interested and were like, oh no, we've got to make it. And so they wanted to put one out before we did. And then we ended up not making the show anyway. So
that's such a bummer. I know that sucks. But anyway, so now with all this AI, I was like,
oh, interesting.
I was like, I wonder if I could like recreate this show just like on YouTube, just for my own like entertainment.
Yeah.
So, you know, just to have fun. So I started playing around with AI.
Shut up.
And this is what I created.
Welcome to the Tommy Argon Show. I'm your host, Tommy Argon. We have a very special guest tonight. It's none other than Carrie Byron from the hit TV show Mythbusters.
Dude, how crazy is that? You can make anything now.
Oh, my God. Making TV, I think, is going to get a lot easier, especially animated. That was great. That was so cool.
I feel like AI is just completely transforming the industry right now in television and film.
God, I wonder how they're using AI in the writing room right now. I mean, I really want to ask our next guest actually so many questions. I want to know what it was like working with their networks. I want to know how different script it is. Do they ever have anything that goes wildly wrong? Like, I'm super excited to talk to our next guest, which, by the way, is multi-award-winning writer, producer, comedian, most known for Modern Family, Danny Zucker.
I love this guy. He's full of but I love him.
One of the things that was so funny is that the younger generation of my family they don't think I'm famous.
Carrie, you're on television.
They are not impressed with my show, but my nephew is currently binge-watching Modern Family, and they have referenced Mythbusters and Punkin' Chunkin' a couple times. And he's like, whoa! All of a sudden, it's like, Aunt Carrie's cool.
Wow, she's famous because another show talked about her.
They did an entire episode of Punkin' Chunkin', and that's when I realized that the writers on that show are Mythbuster fans. And
I'm sure
you know what guest I'm about to bring on.
I sure do, and I love this guy.
All right, so we get to talk to today multi-Emmy Award-winning writer, producer, and comedian Danny Zucker of Modern Family. I mean, he's had a million hits, but Modern Family is the biggie that we all know of, at least my nephew knows of, and impresses him.
Oh, my God.
Danny!
Danny, what is going on?
I'm just, this must be so exciting for you guys. It's like, I'll never know that, but that feeling, but wow, so good. I'm doing great.
We're hoping that you on the show will give us a rating bump. That's what we
that famous Zucker bump.
We need that magic.
So you guys referenced Mythbusters so many times on Modern Family, and I wanted you to take us to the writing room. Like, did you guys watch the show?
There were a handful of us. I certainly was obviously one of the leads in that. But, you know, writers, comedy writers, you know, this is going to shock you, but some of us are nerds. I know you thought we were all like triathletes and womenizers and studs. Yeah. But we are, some of us have like a little secret nerd thing. And so, yeah, so there were a handful of us that watched the show pretty regularly. I had one of the writers on the show, Brad Walsh, and I would frequently talk about it. And also the fact that like Mythbusters came on right around the time that my first kids were born. You know, all my kids were born right around that time. So I remember one of my daughter's friends, like this is in elementary school, like when she'd come over, was like her favorite show was Mythbusters, and we'd watch it. I always thought, oh, that's such a clever show for a little kid to watch. And watching it there. So yeah, so it was a combination of you blew stuff up. You had all these references. It was nerdy, and sciencey, and there's a handful of us who really love science and are sort of frustrated scientists. I think like that the culmination of that was like probably a show like Big Bang Theory, you know, where it's like, oh, all these guys are gonna throw all of their, you know, all the little pop science we all read and watch and so the show is just great fun. And I think like, I don't know, there's just something about blowing stuff and throwing things far and crashing things,
yeah,
and drowning things and burn, you know, that it's just that kind of destruction is just, it's super fun to watch in a safe environment.
I don't know if you guys can tell, but the three of us have been friends for quite a while. I actually remember I found Danny because I was following you on Twitter back in the days when the check marks were just celebrities. And so you could direct message somebody who had a check mark and they'd message you back because it was like kind of exclusive at the time.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like a drunk dial. I was drinking some wine. I'm like, I wonder if the Modern Family guy knows who I am. I'm like, hey, what's up? And then just on a lark, I told you to meet me at Comic-Con if you were in town.
Yeah.
And you did. You showed up. And I was like, I got a tequila waiting for you.
Well, imagine this. So I'm the nerd I described at the very beginning of this podcast who watches Mythbusters. Okay. Just like all you other fans out there who watched Mythbusters at that time. And then Carrie Byron slips into your DMs.
Oh, God.
And says,
I'm blushing.
And says, do you want to drive 2.5 hours and meet us all, and we're gonna have a, and I knew people were having the party, but it's like, if you say no to that, what the f- is wrong with you? So
I
yes,
figured
so,
you'd already be at Comic-Con.
No, I
you're
lived
a nerd,
the, no,
a lot of-
I lived the dream, and I got to hang out with Tori and
oh my god, that was the first time I met you.
I have so many questions for you. Okay, so in case anybody you know has not seen Modern Family, which is crazy, because if you're watching this, you probably are, you know, a big fan. Modern Family was about basically a beautiful family story with a lot of great, like just really developed characters. And you developed one of the characters on the show, which is the dad, Phil. And I feel like Phil was the Mythbuster fan because there was all sorts of stuff that he was constantly doing, like inventions gone
all
rogue.
All the gadgets, totally.
Or, yeah, Tori was talking earlier about like he wanted a robot babysitter, and I instantly thought of an episode where Phil is Skyping in on a rolling robot so he can be part of the family. Like it feels like you wrote that character to be one of us.
I got a credit. I mean, so I didn't create the show. The show is created by Steve Levitan and Christopher Lloyd, not the guy from Back to the Future, the writer Christopher Lloyd. And I have to say that's real. That was always, I'm an early adopter of technology, and Steve Levitan especially was. Like there was never like an iPhone that came out that he didn't have. He was like the first to get that. And so that character was very much infused by Steve and to me to a lesser extent. I mean, we remember, I'm not saying it was one of our better, it wasn't one of our better episodes in the first season, but it was before the iPad came out. You know, we knew the iPad was coming out. And we thought, well, of course, Phil's going to be that guy who's going to be in line for these things, because that was consistent with it. And the most amazing thing was, before it was released, we had these people come down from Cupertino with an iPad. No one had ever seen an iPad.
Whoa.
And we, because ours was going to air right around the launch of it. And so we got to, and it was like, you couldn't leave, you couldn't take pictures. And, but they brought this like iPad out. It was like, whoa, it was very, it was like, it really did feel like we were getting a little glimpse into the future. And it, for those of us who were super nerds on that stuff, it was really special. So yeah, the whatever the gadgets were, we always found that sort of funny, especially gadgets that did not necessarily make your life easier. And, you know, we had Phil, I forgot who came up with this, but we had Phil was always like sort of a frustrated inventor. And yeah, he had this one device called the Real Head Scratcher. And it was like,
yeah,
basically,
oh my God,
it was like a colander which scratched your head with these moving things, and you got your hair caught in it. And so it's, you know, that goes back to the Nutty Professor. I mean, that's like a, that's a trusted, but it seemed organic. And I have to say, Ty Burrell is one of the most gifted natural physical and comedians, regular comedians I've ever worked with, and comic actors. And
it's funny that you mentioned that episode, because there was a, when we were doing Mythbusters, you know how, like, when, for us in reality, it's like, when the cameras roll, you just start doing stupid stuff that you wouldn't normally do, right?
We're not, for sure.
We're not rehearsed actors. We don't have lines. And so I remember Scotty, she was drilling something. She took the drill and stuck it into her bandana and drilled it, like thinking it would be funny, but it actually got caught up and ripped a chunk of hair out of her head.
I remember that.
We were all dead laughing because she was just like trying to do a funny bit and like, oh, look, I'm drilling my head. And then it actually injured her.
The ends of these stories are usually Hollywood stories, and then they died.
And then so, she actually lobotomized herself.
Yeah. She's never been the same.
Did you ever have anything go wildly wrong on set when you guys were filming? Like any major accidents? Because we were always getting hurt doing dumb stuff.
You know, the safety protocols on our show were such that it was like, it was hard to hurt yourself on those things. I'm sure the actors have had like those moments where like, you know, in the fleet of, I mean, I know we've had like a dish break and cut. One time we did a scene where it wasn't about technology, but we had, we met Jay's brother, Ed O'Neill's brother, who was played by Jonathan Banks from, you know, Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. And there was a scene at the end where those two had to wrestle. And both of those guys are alphas. The actors are alphas. And when they got together, there were actors of a certain age who, it started to become serious. Like, not like that they were hurting each other. Not that they wanted to, but it's like, I'm not going to give up being alpha here.
Right.
And they, what I thought, even in the editing room, was a breakaway lamp. Was not. It was like, and somebody was like, it's a, so we, I think both of them were a little bit, although no one would admit it, were both worse for wear after that scene.
You did an entire episode one time on Punkin' Chunkin', which for me, that cracked me up so hard because things kept going wrong with the pumpkin. And like Tori and I hosted Punkin' Chunkin' so many times.
I know.
And we had so many weird close calls on set and things that went wrong. But the funniest one was when we were on Fox News. We were trying to like promote the show, and we were letting their hosts do like a pumpkin chunk out, like it was outside in front, you know, we're in New York, like the whole city's watching, and they actually chunked part of the pumpkin into one of their cameramen.
We're like on the streets of New York, and these guys are flinging, you know, like they set up this big giant, you know, trebuchet or something to launch these pumpkins, and these guys are they're launching pumpkins on the streets of New York, and they're like kind of closing off traffic, but these things are going into the, like, overhead.
Oh, my God.
And
we were not consulted on this. We could have told them this was just a terrible idea and this is super dangerous. And they're like, no, we saw you guys do it on TV.
It was like nuts.
I'm starting to think Fox News might be reckless. it's terrifying. I was amazed that you guys never, I mean, I know you've told me some stories, but it's like, I'm sure there's several bullets you most literally dodged in various cases.
Okay. So when Science Channel, I'm sure you were watching all this stuff because you definitely were nerding out on all the same stuff we were nerding out on.
Yeah.
Science Channel was trying this like experiment where they wanted to do psi sports. So it was like, what are nerd sports? So like we obviously had Punk and Chunkin, which like Tori and I have a million stories of close calls, but they also wanted to do large and dangerous rocket ships.
I remember that.
You remember that one?
Yeah.
Tori had a show called Flying Anvils. Did you ever see that one?
I didn't. How did I miss Flying Anvils? I
mean, everybody watched that show.
I'm the target demo for that.
So Tori has my very favorite story of something going horribly wrong on set.
We were in the middle of Missouri, and it was like during the summer, and they have this big event at this fair where they take 200-pound anvils, and they cut out, they like drill out a hole, fill it with a pound of black powder, and then they put another 200-pound anvil on top, and then they light a fuse, and these things explode, and it launches these things, you know, like 300 feet into the air. I mean, it's nuts how high these things are going, and you're just like looking up, going, is this thing going to crash on our heads? And so the way they would judge the competition is how high, so like the hang time, so they would time it from the time the blast goes.
Anvil hang time. It's an anvil.
It's an anvil hang time. And oh so then how far from the launch anvil they would measure. So the closer you are, that meant that you made it very level and it was like a good shot. So anyway, so we're doing this all day and you just start getting used to the fact that there's, you know, these 200-pound hunks of steel flying over your head. But so they get to this one guy. They called him the Colonel. He had this black top hat, these horn-rimmed glasses, and he was like smoking his cigar, and he was like, this is my 350th shot or whatever. And so we're like all on him with the cameras. We're like, okay, this is the Colonel. He's about to go for his, you know, record-breaking shot, whatever. He lights the fuse, and all of a sudden it explodes. And just we're all just there, sitting there. And there's this big white cloud, and we're like, oh, my God, we just killed the Colonel. And we got it on camera, and so the smoke clears, and I swear he looked like a cartoon character, where like his hair was all shot back like this, his face was black from the soot, and where his glasses were, they came off, and he had like these clear spots.
And did the Roadrunner just run by him at that point?
Seriously,
exactly. It was a total Acme moment.
Oh my god.
So we're like, oh my God, and then the cameraman's all, it's over here. And we're like, what are you talking about? We look down, he had blown his thumb off. And they're like, the thumb, it's over here. And it was like the most terrifying moment I've ever experienced on camera. And they're like, okay, wrap him up. And he's like, they're putting him on a gurney, and the helipack came in. He's given the no thumbs up, like he's okay.
Oh my God.
With the wrapper. He's like a bloody stump, and he's giving us the no thumbs up. And so they all look at me and they're like, oh, well, you know, you're a Mythbusters. You must see this kind of stuff all the time. And I'm like, dude, we have safety protocols. Like, I've never seen anything this gnarly in my life.
I knew it was bad because Tori called me from set and he was whispering. He's like, dude, like, I have to, there's ambulances.
Dude, it was so gnarly.
Did they save the thumb? Do you know?
Well, so what happened is, because we were like, can they reattach the thumb? And the high speed operator got a shot of the thumb flying across like the shot, you know, across the frame.
Yeah.
And it had this long string attached, which was his tendon. So it had ripped the tendon out from his forearm. So there was no way, even if they reattached it, it would have just been like a limp thumb.
So it would have been more like a thumbs down.
Yeah. I saw limp thumb at a Coachella. They were.
I mean, it was pretty glory days when we were both on the air back then. I mean, it was like, I felt like when we started Discovery Channel and like History Channel, and everybody was kind of taking a chance on new material in a new way, because it was like you had the main networks with all of the like main sitcoms, then you had a handful of cable networks, and like, so we still had a pretty small sample size to work from here, like Mythbusters, Dirty Jobs, Deadliest Catch, they were all coming on at the same time. But like now, streaming and the internet, and there's just such a glut of entertainment that it's hard to capture an audience enough so that like you want to concentrate a big budget on a show. Like Mythbusters wouldn't be made today, even though Mythbusters back then was so budget. Our explosions were free.
Except
we weren't really paid that well.
Second tier hosts made about the same money as the actors on your shows. That was the good part is we got paid like we were.
No, same. I mean, I feel, you know, I feel like my generation, we got to take, you know, we got in at the last cash grab in comedies too. But I mean, I think it's still there. But yeah, it's tricky. I mean, it's tricky to shoot here and that. And, you know, I think the AI thing is a really interesting discussion to have, because I think we're at a point with AI that AI can replace that. You remember I was talking about mediocre writing before, like that mid-level thing? It can replace that. I mean, there's plenty of things. If I want to write the banter on American Idol, or if I want to write even like a TGIF, like, you know, a kid's show or something like that, you know, just for any of those kinds of things, it can do that now. So, and it will only get better. I think it has a harder time. Its ability to create a hit, an actual hit, because that's sort of an original thinking idea, and it's still like a generative, it's still like is accumulating from stuff that's already been out there.
Well, and it's only as good as what it's been fed.
You said it better than I
can't find anywhere where AI comes up with a good joke, because there's so much humanity in comedy, and I have to say that the writing on Modern Family makes it such a classic, because funny. It's like provokes big emotions. Like I feel tears and I feel love and I feel there's so much to it that I don't think that AI is going to be able to do that. But I've seen some really good posts on the internet lately where they kind of like take a freeze frame of a television show and they're like, look out in the audience. Like some of those extras in the background, there's only like one or two humans and the rest are like these weird morphy background people who are just not real.
That's huge. I mean, that kind of stuff is absolutely huge. You're right. And thanks for saying that about Modern Family. Those are the things we really loved when we could sort of sneak in emotion. Like it wasn't like we weren't leading with it. We never tried to do very special episodes. In fact, our favorite episodes were the ones where it seemed really silly. And then it's like, oh, fuck, why am I caring about it?
Totally. It's like it totally hits your heart. You're like, wait, this, it's not funny anymore. It's like really emotional.
How did that make me fit? We had one that was called, Bill Rubel wrote it, and we had, you know, we all write them together. He did such a great job and had some great moments in it. But it was called the Butler's Escape, and it was Luke wanted to quit doing magic, and it was just this big, like silly thing. There was a joke where it's like, he wants to quit magic. His parents are yelling at him. And he's like, I hate you guys. And he throws down and it's smoke and then he's gone. And it's like, you know, so it's this really silly show. But at the end, what you realize is that he's quitting magic because he's being picked on because it's considered like stupid at school. So it's that moment where you sort of stop doing things you like because other people are judging it. It was something that Phil could relate to, and he seemed to have conquered. And it was like, oh, we all can care about that. It like actually got you. But it was like such a surprise because it seemed like the silliest story all the way through. And so when we could land those moments, boy, those were the ones we were all really proud of.
But do you find that, like, especially with comedy, where you have so many people policing what is like what jokes are being said because it might be offensive, that you're dumbing down the comedy? Because, you know, you see like Netflix or you see Amazon, they're coming out with like these kind of edgier comedies because they're not kind of beholden to, you know, that judgment.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's always been, I think there's been a certain, the puritanical side of the media has always been there. In terms of like, the censorship on network television was much worse back before we had the word cancel culture than it is now. So, because I don't think cancel culture is frankly a joke. I'm not a big proponent of it, believer in it. So the people who are crying that they've been canceled seem to get $1 million deals. And it's like, I'm only hearing that you're canceled because I see you on every fucking streaming service.
Right.
I can't be canceled. This show's, I know.
I need to pick a minority group to pick on and then get mad at them for being mad at me. And then I will, but I don't know. I think comedy this is me pontificating. I think comedy works best when there are restrictions. Now, I don't always agree with them, and I mostly don't agree with them. But somehow, when you have to come up with a more clever way to say something, like if somebody says, like, you don't get this, we can't afford to do this thing, how are you going to make that happen now cheaply? And you can find that way. It's like, somehow it works. It works better. And so when I can't say something, or I have to be a little bit more clever about it. I mean, honestly, think about like Seinfeld, that episode, The Contest, where they're who's going to stop. It would have been 30% less funny if instead of saying master of my domain, they said masturbate. It's like, it's funnier that they didn't say it.
On Discovery Channel, we weren't allowed to say certain words more than a certain amount of times.
Oh,
so
we got those.
When we did the episode on farting, we couldn't say fart more than like once. So we had to come up with creative ways of saying flatulence or Chanel number two or ham slam, like just a million different ways to say flatulence. And then we had another episode where we weren't allowed to say the word sperm more than once.
Okay.
So we kept calling it like genetic legacy. Like we got to make it so much funnier. I totally believe this.
I have something great to show you. So I did a show on the WB for two seasons called Off Center. Don't worry, you didn't see it, but it was a really fun, broad, dirty show. Like John Cho was in it, and there were a bunch of they're great people in it. But as I knew, as we were getting closer to being canceled, we did an episode about one of our characters thinking about getting an adult circumcision. And Eugene Levy was playing his urologist. And the episode was fine, but it wasn't as funny as the standards notes I got, which were the memo on what I could and couldn't do in the episode is funnier than the episode. And I actually leaked it to the New York Post. And it went out. And I actually, I may read from it, can I stand up for 1 second?
Please.
It's worth it. I have a phrase. Hold on. This is for an episode. This is from February 25th, 2002. And for off-center script, it's for an episode called The Unkindest Cut. And this was the guy who wrote it, he actually framed this one.
Oh my God.
So here's what we could go. As discussed at the table, in this episode, we are dealing with a tonnage issue with regard to sexual suggestive materials. It is essential to reduce and or modify for the significant number of uses of penis. And then they list page 4, 5, 7, 9, 18, 19, 21, 22, 23, two of them, 25, 38, 39, two of them. Also for foreskin, which is on page 8, 15, and 38, and testicles, page 20, as well as euphemisms for the same, such as your thingy, page 2, covered wagon and unit, page 3.
Covered wagon.
Turtleneck, page 4, little fella, page 5, anteater, page 6, diddy, page 15, hooded cobra, page 21. Cloaking device, and my pig is in my blanket, 28. The English package, page 35. Home of the helmet.
I am so impressed right now. I'm dead. I am so impressed.
Page 38, sheath and member. And then, but that's just the first two paragraphs of it. So I'm a great fan of these. I haven't shown that to many people since then. But
that is hilarious.
That is awesome. Yeah, I used to love getting the network notes about us. They'd be like, that shirt doesn't look like a shirt that Tori would wear. And Tori's like, this is my shirt. exactly what Tori would wear.
I just want to jump back to AI and like ChatGPT. Okay. And you guys had the big writer strike over that, right? That was like
It was an issue in it. Yeah, for sure.
Right.
It wasn't everything, but it was an issue for sure.
Yeah. And so how are you going to combat that?
I don't know. I mean, it's always hard to combat. It's always hard to put technology like it's the toothpaste is out of the tube, you know. And so I think you do have to figure out a way to declare it in some way. It has to be sort of a declarative. I think that there is a way to make. I mean, I'm not a tech guy, but I do think that there is a way to sort of. I know we don't know. I know these are black box systems, so you can't really figure out what's in there. But I do think that there are ways that they can watermark certain things, or you can know, or you can just acknowledge that these things have been done in this way. I think that it's a legal issue, ultimately, and a copyright issue more than, and so you just have to figure out the laws that will regulate it. And it's hard right now because we're living in an era of sort of a lot of deregulation. So, I think this is probably low on people's priority list. And so, but eventually, it'll happen. When it starts to lose money, when it starts to not make money for people, that's usually what kind of happens. So
for like somebody who has an idea or, you know, a show idea or script pitching in the room, what's your advice?
I mean, if you've never...
Seems very pointed for Tori specifically.
No,
he's
if somebody
was writing a script.
If somebody had a script about a mid-level host, TV host.
The best version of that is like, if you don't have like a writing resume, it's going to be really hard to have your ideas heard. So if you have an idea for a script, write the script independent of anything else. Like if you have an idea to write something, write something. Like the idea of pitching something before, because ideas are cheap. Now, which is not to say, like, you may have written, like, you know, so somebody might have written a great piece in the New Yorker or in the Atlantic, and it's like, well, that could be a show, what that was.
Right.
And so then you have a little piece of IP that you're developing in that way, or you have your own personal story, and you're looking to have a writer come out, or you want to tell it. But again, you want it to be, it's not like, you can come in with nothing and say, I have this great idea. It takes place at a dental office where I used to work. And, you know, everybody was so wacky. And it's like, okay, well, that's, it's great. I mean, because, you know, there are two shows like about, I don't know, this is not a slam on either, but there's like two shows about a family living in Queens. And, you know, there's like All in the Family and there's King of Queens, and they're vastly different shows. And like, it's about execution. So execute. And like everybody, including me, we're all looking for excuses not to write. Like, here's the idea I'm thinking about. Are you interested? Just write. Because every time you write, you become a better writer. Like, it's one of those weird skills where, like, the first, I'm not saying everything you write will be better than the last thing you wrote. But I will say that, like, you will be a better writer as you write these things. You'll be not hung up on the same things you were hung up in the beginning. And so, like, I feel, you know, so that's where I feel right now.
Danny, we've kept you for long enough.
It's my pleasure.
That's
went
my
by
way
fast.
Of saying I'm just sick of you.
Me too.
It's time to go.
Oh, dude, so good to see you. Thank you
this
so much.
This I didn't
much.
Miss.
I miss you. I miss your bullshit. I miss everything about you.
I miss you guys too. And I mean, whether this is on the pod or not, I would love for us all to see each other soon.
Well, thank you for being part of our Nerdiverse.
I
love talking to you all the time about the strange things that we're obsessed with on the internet. All of the, you know, and let's continue to have that conversation.
Maybe one time next time, if I ever come back, I'll tell that story I told you about my wife's C-section. Okay.
Ooh, why do you wait? Why'd you wait for that to the end of the podcast?
It's not for this one. Okay. I'll talk to you guys later.
Oh my God, it was so fun to talk to Danny. I love how many weird friends we've made over the years by doing
the
show. The Nerdiverse is strong.
Dude, he's such a good guy. I miss that guy.
You know, it's funny, as we were talking Flying Anvils earlier.
Yeah.
And, you know, we always end the show with audience questions so that we could talk to our island of misfits. And I've got one here from Aaron, who is asking about a special that was called Flying Anvils. I remember that day and how much fun it was. So I'm so glad that you talked about it, because that was already one of the audience questions that we were going to talk about.
Is that crazy? That was one of the most horrific moments in my career.
We've had such a weird past and collection of stories, and it started long before Mythbusters. Like, my dad always used to say that, like, I was a Mythbuster in training from the time I was a kid, because I tried to push my sister 360 on a swing set. I was always using her as a crash test dummy for experiments. Like, I know your childhood stories because you and I have been hanging out for a long time, but it looks like one of our fans also wants to ask you a question about something that is one of my favorite stories you tell.
Okay.
So it says, I remember reading, this is Nicola, I remember reading somewhere that you DIY'd a flamethrower as a teenager. So, Tori, can you tell this story so everybody can feel really sorry for your parents?
Oh, my God. So my parents were out of town and they left me alone. And that's a mistake right there. And
you didn't have a robot babysitter?
I didn't have a robot babysitter. See, this is a lesson. My parents, don't go out of town. Stay home. It's safer. So my dad had this airless, it was like a Binks car paint gun. And, we were using it for different projects. And I thought to myself, I was like, oh, what if I fill it with gasoline and then put a little torch on the end? I can make a flamethrower. So I did it and it worked amazingly. But as I was spraying back and forth, I like turned and I hit the side of the house and the whole wall caught on fire. And I was like freaking out. So I dropped the spray can, ran, got the hose, sprayed it down, put the fire out. However, the house was now all covered in black soot. It was a stucco finish, but now the whole thing was just pure black. And I'm like,
dude, you're poor parents. Your poor parents.
Do you the fact that I didn't burn the house down was like, okay, we made it through that problem. Now, how am I going to get this wall clean? Because as soon as my dad comes home, he's going to know exactly what happened. So I'm spraying it. I'm scrubbing it with the, detergents. Nothing is working. And then I'm like, I'm dead. But then I remembered we had just gotten the house painted like a year before. So there was leftover paint. So I went and rolled it and you could not tell. It looked perfect, right? So I was like, crisis averted.
You got away with it.
Totally got away with it.
This is like a teenage coming of age movie right here.
But so then years later, we're on Mythbusters and we went on the Craig Ferguson Late Show. And I'm retelling this story and my parents called me up the next day. They're like, you son of a saint, like you almost burned our house down. We had no idea for like 20 years and they're finding out on television. So,
dude, yeah. What a way to find out because you're talking on the Craig Ferguson Show.
Oh my God. My parents were so livid. They're like, what? I mean, by this point they were like, this is funny, but God, that could have been awful.
Oh my God, that's amazing. That's amazing. I seem to remember that the cops came to your house a couple times while you were a teenager.
Oh, that's another.
You were trouble, dude.
I got stories for trouble. Days when it comes to getting in trouble with the police.
I don't think I ever got into that much trouble. I was a playful Mythbuster in training. Like I was always building strange stuff. My dad had a awesome workshop and I love that smell of wood and making stuff, but like you were a troublemaker. You would have been so fun to hang out. Do you think we would have hung out in high school?
Probably not.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, we would have been besties. We would have been best of friends.
Do you ever build weird, destructive things now? Like
no.
If you could go mess around in the garage and just like play around, would you make a bigger, better flamethrower? And how would you do it?
You know what? I was going to say no, but yes, I have this. I want to build a rocket car. Remember when we did all those rockets for the Rocket Surfer the Rocket Surfer. And we strapped all these model rockets to the back of a surfboard and lit it all on fire and try to surf across a lake, right? That was the myth that this guy was from California and moved to the Midwest and wanted to surf. So he created this rocket-powered surfboard to get across the lake. So we did it. It was awesome. And I was like, man, I want to build a little like soapbox go-kart and do the same thing. And just
you pick rockets rather than like some sort of like jet engine that would just like,
Like a jet engine. It's like, I would have to go get it and then have the gas and it would be a bigger production. This would just be build a bank of rockets and then, maybe go do the Red Bull when they,
the Red
Bull Red challenge,
Bull challenge where they go off the
end of the wharf. So like I could do
we
that with these
enter
rockets.
We should that together. Like, do you think they're allowing? Do they allow things like rockets? Like,
I don't know,
I
wouldn't tell them.
Do.
I would just do it. Like, I would just start rolling, and then they're like, "Oh!" And then I would just hit the button, and then just be like,
so they're like,
and everyone would be like, "What? You're disqualified!" And I'll go, "I don't care. That was awesome."
I have to say, I love the audience questions at the end of our podcast. It's really really fun. So please keep sending in your questions. DM us. Make sure you follow, subscribe, and of course, come back next week.
Yes.
Misfits out.
Pioneer.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.